Welcome to Woman Got Game. I'm Sophia Fisher, and today's guest is Coach Tandy Bradford. Tandy's the head women's basketball coach at Lourdes University. In her short time with the Grey Wolves, Bradford has already produced 6 second-team All-Wolverine Hoosier Athletic Conference selections, more than triple the previous total in program history prior to her arrival. Hey, Tandy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here. And I just want to start with a question about your coaching journey. Seems like basketball has taken you to different places, and I really want to know, you know, a little bit about your background, but what really drew you to Lourdes University?
Absolutely. You know, I've been very privileged and very blessed with a career that has taken me with some amazing people, amazing universities. Lourdes is really special because it does tie me with my family. My husband's the baseball coach there. So, you know, that was, to me, God's timing. Our son just happened to be at the right age. He was a senior at Northview. So from a community standpoint, I'd heard a lot about how much everybody works together. There are coaches there that I'd known previously while I was at the University of Toledo. And so really it was just the community and how much everybody wanted to build up the university right there in Sylvania. And we live right there in Sylvania. So that was an amazing thing for us to be able to stay home and coach at the collegiate level.
So who is it when someone says, hey, Coach Bradford, do you both look? Is
that how we do? And now his team started it. As far as respectfully, when they see me in the hall, they call me Mrs. Coach Bradford. And so I do try to be like, that's the Mr. Coach Bradford. I don't think that play on words has taken off as well. It's easier to call the Mrs. Coach Bradford.
So I guess really let's talk a little bit more about your coaching journey and where you started off. And you've been at different universities and different levels of coaching. And I'd like to talk about that as well, because I think right now the Grey Wolves are considered NAIA division.
Correct.
Okay. And that is a Division II.
So there are no more divisions in NAIA, so it's just strictly NAIA. And so that's a joy in itself because we don't have that separation.
Gotcha.
And we can compete with everybody.
Gotcha. So in your background, you coached at obviously Division I at University of Toledo, correct?
Yes.
And
yeah.
Then before that, where were you at? And
so I started my career at Kentucky Wesleyan, and right out of college, I had always known I wanted to coach, and the people around me knew that. I'm pretty privileged that one of my assistant coaches just got a big D1 job. So I was surrounded by people that really thrived in the business and really inspired me to just say, hey, apply for everything. And I tell kids that now, apply for everything. If you're willing to move and go, just apply. And I was lucky enough that my husband was off playing baseball and I could go anywhere, and Kentucky Wesleyan called. And I moved to Owensboro, and it was a beautiful job, worked with beautiful people, amazing administration as far as teaching me the business, and the men's staff was really the reason I was able to become a head coach, because they were sturdy in teaching me, like, hey, this is the business. And they also taught me some things that I don't want to do, you know, and I think you learn both sides of it. And then within the time frame, my journey is very unique. My husband went to Xavier University. We are tied very closely. We grew up together. So I say our circle always comes back together. I was recruited at Xavier and talked to the head coach when he was recruited, who was Mark Elin.
Oh, yes, and I know Mark.
Yes.
Awesome.
So Mark then got his job at Toledo, and we happened to be in the recruiting world together. And when his assistant Tina left, he gave me the call to come up here. And that's originally how we got to Toledo. My son was born here, so we call him a Toledoan. We're from Kansas. My son is not. So, you know, once we were at Toledo, I did have my son here. And I think that changed the game a little bit. My husband stopped playing baseball professionally. And I was really in that mix where you try to balance everything. And the coaches, I knew some people that were at Georgia Tech, and they thought that would be a different framework for my lifestyle and helping. Obviously, down in the South, baseball jobs are, you know, on every other block, I feel like. and they thought that would be a little easier transition for my husband. So we moved to Georgia, and I worked at Georgia Tech. And just ironically, the coach that I came in with at Toledo on the baseball side was still here, had met my husband. They became friends. Lo and behold, he called Josh, and we packed up and moved back to Toledo, and we've been here since. And it's been a great city for us. And, you know, ironically, this is my son's home.
That's great.
This is home for
it's
him.
It's like some divine intervention happened there. And yes. I like when things line up like that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And like I said, like Tricia and I had kind of run into each other in Evansville. She was at Evansville while I was in Owensboro. And to have her come back up here.
Trisha Cullip,
at Toledo. Sure. So for her to come back up here, and she's had assistant coaches that, like, my boss at Georgia Tech was her college teammate. So, you know, the circle and the coaching tree is small. And that's kind of where I feel blessed to be, in a circle of people that just thrive in the business. And they're always willing to listen or help and take a phone call. And we've been able to help other young coaches through the business. And so it's really a blessing just as far as the path that I've been on.
I like it. Tell us more about the difference then. You've experienced the D1 level, yes, at the highest NC2A, you know, brackets, and then all the way through to even Division III. I mean, there's that entire gap. Can you tell our audience a little bit more about the difference, not just in coaching at those levels, but, you know, players, recruitment?
Sure. You know, I am unique in the way that I have played or coached at every level. I played at a junior college back home in Kansas, played volleyball and basketball there. And then when I transferred out here with my husband, when he went to Xavier, I went to Thomas More. And at the time it was Division III. But I knew I would have a job when I left there. Financial aid worked out, so I didn't have to pay to go to school there. So, you know, they were figuring out how to get a lot of us transfers in. At the time, they were even figuring that out then. And then Kentucky Wesleyan is Division II, and then I've been at the D1s and now at NAIA. And I would say they're all unique as far as the kind of athlete that they want. And I tell the girls, like, when I was at, you know, in the ACC, that becomes a lifestyle. And you really have to want that. Like, you have to want the daily grind. You know, our girls at the NAIA want to compete the same way, but their lifestyle might be a little different. Like, they want the vacations with their families in the summer. They do work where the girls in the ACC can't have jobs like that. That's where the NIL came in, because, like, my husband couldn't have a job while he was at Xavier. Those things didn't work together. Where I worked, I had a job at the mall. So I think it's not the competition and the competitiveness that separates the athletes. It's kind of the time commitment and the willingness to be put on a stage at a different level. And those are things that I don't look at, like, as a coach, that are weaknesses. They're just individual personal desires and how you want your life to be lived and what you're willing to commit to. And every level has a different commitment level.
Sure, and you've also been a recruiter.
Yes.
From your career standpoint. Talk a little bit about that. If there's a young woman listening right now that is thinking, hey, I really want to play some basketball at the college level, you know, what advice would you give them to be able to navigate those waters? And
well, first, we are in a unique time because rosters are being cut or they're being, you know, navigated differently. And I'd really say decide what you want in that career, because, you know, so many people, and they live with social media, where everybody's saying, oh, well, look what I got and look what scholarship I got and, you know, look where I'm going. So it's hard not to think, oh, the work I'm putting in, I should be there too, and I should be at this level. But really, what is your desire for that time frame? Like, do you want to commit to all that? Do you... you know, want to play? There's a good question. Like, you could go to the best college, but are you going to play? And are you going to be the 12th girl, or are you going to be in the top 9? And how are you going to work your way up? And you have to ask those questions, and you have to be really bold in asking those questions, because you may love the university and you're okay with starting at 12, 15 and working your way up and having that possibility, or you may want to play your whole career And if you want to play your whole career, you have to be willing to sacrifice something sometimes. And what does that sacrifice look like? But don't get drawn into what everybody else wants for you. Like, ask yourself what you want. And people forget, like, we have a college athlete, like, in our house. And I think he's done a phenomenal job of saying to himself, this is what I want. And not really caring about what others predicted for him or what mom and dad had in our own lives. Like, he didn't compare himself to us. He really has chosen his own path, and he's successful at it. But I'm proud of the way he's listened to us recruit and say, oh, I'm going to do it my own way. But I think kids do. The social media, you know, I've listened to a lot of girls, and that's where coaching high school gave me a different perspective, because you were on the other side of it. You were on the recruit side of it, where sure. when you're at college, you are the recruiter. And so listening to the high school girls ponder those questions, like, coach, how do I do this? Like, but so-and-so, you know, over here is going to this school. Like, shouldn't I be at this school? You have to say, but what do you want? So I think the young student athlete really has to decide what they want, not what mom and dad want. And financially, like, sometimes financially, what people are offering don't really fit your future. And that's a sacrifice. Like, you have to decide down the road, is this going to be worth it if I take this? Because, you know, I love the game. When over here, you're going to have college paid for, or it's going to really benefit my education or my career. And this school over here doesn't have that option. And sometimes people do sacrifice that. You know, we've talked to two or three that have done that in the last year, that went places that they didn't really have their major, but they had the basketball. And now they're going, oh, wait, I need to start thinking about my major more than the basketball. And I think NAIA does provide that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, because in one breath, I want to say there's never been a better time to be a part of women's basketball in the history of, you know, America and beyond.
Absolutely.
But also, there's such still a small percentage of, if your end goal is WNBA or, you know, even, well, playing overseas, I think is probably more attainable.
Yes.
But still, I know they're adding teams to the WNBA roster, but there's still so many disparities in salary, and obviously the, you know, the Clark effect did a lot to move that, Angel Reese and so many others. There's just
right.
so many others, right? But, and looking at that and listening to you speak about it, it's very fascinating, because at some level, there's so much hype around playing D1 or, you know, going the distance and getting, you know, big on NIL deals. Name, image, and likeness is a big factor. I think it's putting a lot of different pressures on recruitment.
Right.
And for, you know, universities that are eligible for that type and are pursuing that type of activity. I think it's getting so competitive. It's almost over the top. We've never seen that before. So it's
right.
interesting to hear your perspective on if you're the student athlete, and that's why we're all here, right?
Right.
Is
right.
to help them. And I know you're a mentor, and I think that's important. You're giving your time to these athletes. But I think it could get pretty complicated. And then there's the branding, right? There's
right.
how do you brand yourself if you're a young person coming out of college, or not college, a high school, going into college, and who's looking at you? I can imagine it could get very stressful for these athletes.
I think so. And, you know, it's a question even I should probably even ask my players more, is how they, hopefully they don't look at each other's choices. Like, I think my girls do a great job of kind of handling their social media, but there's also that disparity of some like to do it more than others. And they just have to allow that space. To me, they have to, and I'm on the other side of it, right? I'm not internal. So that's my goal, is to hope that they are saying, oh, well, she really likes that. We'll cheer her on, and we hope she's successful. But, you know, in life, we have learned that that is hard for young people. It's hard for young people not to read too much into somebody's social world or your text messages or, you know, all the social things that we have. And to add the pressure of money on top of that, you know, I can't imagine personally. And so hopefully we continue to get more guidance. We continue to get more policy on it, because I think they need it, because they are coming out of high school. And, you know, they have people that may be on the outside of them saying, well, no, you have to have it because our family needs it. There's so many things that we don't know. And if there's some policy and some guidance around it, or even some places that they can get advice on it, because as coaches, we need to learn more, but also we can't always advise on it. And that puts us in a hard spot. So, and it's a hard conversation to have, I think, for the coaches that are at different levels than I'm at. I certainly don't have to deal with it that much. I think that would be something I would want to know more about, is how they handle those conversations. Sure. And it's certainly something that is been a big topic at the Final Four convention last year and this year.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. You know, it's not going away. So
no.
There's so much conversation, some gaining momentum, and other stuff still. I don't think they've worked it out. I think it's a hot potato, if you will. I don't think anybody has the answer to what's going to happen next. But either way, it's been great for women's basketball, great exposure, media contracts in general, and just for the love of the game and the exposure, right?
You
get younger people involved and excited and all the things behind that. And speaking of that, I want to know a little bit more about your coaching philosophy on and off the court.
Sure. You know what? My philosophy has developed over the years, but obviously is giving back. As a player, you know, one of the things I knew right away was I was so honored to be able to play the game for as long as I played it, with great people, great teammates, and not be in debt when I left. And to be able to give back, strategically, I love coaching the game, like that's a given. But to be able to sit in a seat and be able to give young women the same opportunity that I had and the same choices that I had is really such a blessing. And, you know, my philosophy kind of stems from that. Like, they need to be able to really thrive at the college level, but they are women. They're not young girls anymore. So trying to have a philosophy around growing in the game, learning it at a higher level, but also learning how to serve in a different way, from serving each other to serving your community in that leadership, and just becoming who you are in what you want to do as a leader. That's really the philosophy behind it, is they are women that are developing their careers and they're going to be leaders in their careers. So how do you teach that through the game? How do you teach that through their daily lives? And I've been really lucky to watch different people do that in building their own programs as an assistant coach. And I think we are working really hard to do that the right way over at Lourdes at the NAIA level. You know, I think the women that we have really, really do a good job of trying to hold those standards.
Yeah. And I think, too, one of the things we talked about in our first conversation was, you know, the impact of having more female leaders in administrative roles. Like you mentioned at Lourdes University, their athletic director.
Yes.
I think your prior athletic director was female also. But,
correct.
You know, we're seeing more and more women being placed in higher administrative executive roles, moving that needle, plus yourself. But how do you really feel that in this scenario, as we're seeing more women in these positions, how is it going to shape the future of women's sports?
Well, I think it's like me saying, well, I played and I want to give back. I think when they're sitting there, their thought process does allow them to think like the players they're serving. And they understand, you know, we had some great female administrators in every institution I've been at, to be fair. And they really understood when I was pregnant. They understood the most of, like, how to negotiate that time and those factors. And that, quite frankly, I could still do my job. Like, it didn't have to end, where there were people around me that struggled with that. And not to say, looking back, that they hated it, right? That's a bold statement. But they didn't understand it. And balancing that for a man is just different. It's just different. And so to have people that really understand how to juggle that, you know, I have a player now that has two children. She's trying to work in the media world. And, you know, I'm proud of how she's voiced for herself. But not only is she doing that, she's showing other young women in that field how to balance doing it really, really well, but with a family, and doing it in a very independent and dedicated way, because she's thriving in it. But I'm hoping that some of what she watched, like she played for me at an age where my son was her daughter's age. So watching me carry him around at games and watching me say, hey, he's just going to be on the bench with us today. And hey, you guys are going to have to watch him. You know, those girls were very instrumental. Like I was an AD at the time. Okay. And they did say, hey, coach, now that you're an AD, does that help our program? Like, do we get to do the things the boys do? And at the time, I do remember saying to them, you know, it's all just equal. Like, we're trying to make all athletics the same. But I do remember the light in their eyes thinking, oh, they're seeing me so differently. They're seeing that they can do things differently. And I think women in positions of any race, any background, anything that you're doing, and quite frankly, that happens for men or women, but women just haven't been seen in it. When you're seen in it, it's a possibility. When you're seen in it, it's a possibility. So our young women now have the strength to make choices. That's the name of the game.
Yeah,
they're being given choices.
I like that a lot. And I think that, you know, my next question is, when you're fostering this type of leadership and confidence in young players, right,
yeah,
especially young women, right, they're stepping up into their own power. You know, how much of that is for you kind of at the end of the day, that's what you're really doing? And maybe they're not seeing that versus, you know, getting them to a winning season.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself, you know, navigating them into leadership positions and indirectly, like you're saying, they're watching you coach, they're watching you lead. And I just think sports is just such a great opportunity to build confidence.
Oh, wow. That's a wonderful question. I do think, you know, I think as coaches, and we talk about, I have a wonderful strength coach that, you know, she's kind of in our office daily. Our desks are in opposite offices, and she reminds us a lot that we get older. We coach 18 to 24 year olds every year. They never, that age group never changes, but we get older. And so, you know, I think your question is very poignant in the way that there are days where you're really trying to stress how much better or how much strength these young women have. But it is hard for them to see that because they're in the midst of it. They're balancing the wants of basketball and what they expect of themselves, what people expect of them. They're balancing homework. They're balancing relationships. They're balancing family, maybe jobs, finances. They're learning about their finances. You know, they have all this stuff on their plate, so they're in the midst of it, of trying to learn these lessons. So hearing another adult sometimes probably is a little hard. But so we remind ourselves, you know, when they're 30 or when they're 35, it's probably going to click and they're going to be like, yay,
sure.
You know, we're so glad coach was there to listen and have a couch in our office.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, the goal is not to give up for ourselves. Like the goal is not to beat ourselves up. And that's where you're lucky that we work in an industry that has so many people that are reliant on each other, that you can pick up a phone and say, hey, how are you doing this today? And how are you helping your team lead today? And, you know, most coaches in the business would not take that call. And it's like being at the Final Four, I'm just coming home. There are so many coaches that will put out there, hey, just DM me, I want to connect. And I had dinners with people that I can't really talk to all season, but when we get together, we all, you know, kind of conversate on, hey, how did you get through the season? Or how did you do this? And, you know, with our winning, people did. They were like, hey, did anything change for your team? Or, you know, what flipped the script for you guys to get all the way to a winning season? And how did that growth happen so quickly? So for some people, it took too long. Some people, it was quick. So, you know, I think pushing that leadership on kids depends on who your kids are. And you have to be patient with it. And you have to not give up, but you also have to have a circle of your own. And I am doubly blessed because I live with a coach. Like, sure. I have somebody in my own house that we can kind of balance each other's life.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's absolutely, man, you know, male versus female, right?
Correct.
And it's sometimes, though, you know, there, while there are obviously, you know, differences, but at the same time, you know, I would imagine the athletes are dealing with the same issues.
And there are certainly times he comes in, my team should laugh at this, that he says, ooh, girls, no, no, I don't understand that. Mostly over our food. Yeah. Like, we eat one way, they just get pizzas.
Sure.
And the boys sometimes, I think, want to be girls and don't want pizza anymore. Yeah. And vice versa. Yeah. So, you know, they can be kind of silly things, but they can also be things that are very different. And then at the same time, they do. They all suffer with juggling the plates. Mm-hmm. They all suffer with things that go on with their family life that are heavy. You know, everybody in this room could probably sit back and say, you know, I've dealt with death or cancer or, you know, things that come up within your family that are hard, drug addiction, that tear us away from our daily life. And you have to really focus on it. You have to compartmentalize that. And basketball is one avenue for us to learn how to do that. And, you know, if we can help them have the game be a servant of that it be fun and it takes them away from some of those heavy things that they deal with, that's awesome because they have a team around them. And some of them are going to work within teams. And so they have to learn how to do that. So that's one way.
It's a nice peer-to-peer. So it's like the athletes, you know, they develop a nice, tight, it seems like, bonding culture of its own, and you're part of building that culture.
Yes.
And how you set that bar and the standard,
yes,
of which, you know, the Grey Wolves should act, respond, look, feel, I think that gives it a really nice experience,
yes,
at the collegiate level, which I always loved, you know, in playing sports, is that camaraderie, but also everything else that goes along with it. You navigate that so much easier. Now, let me ask you this. If we were to sit in on one of your practices, what would surprise us most?
Funnily enough, I think people are surprised at how much music we listen to, and probably the music we listen to.
Yeah. What genre? Tell me, please.
Well, that's not a pick for me.
Okay.
I couldn't even tell you because it's pretty broad. I try to learn the names of the musicians. I'm really bad at it. I just say, play it, girls. I like everything. I do wish they'd probably broaden it a little more because I do know there are probably teammates that listen to more than we listen to daily. But I think that's where you learn to love it because your teammates all like different things. So you accept compromise. So that, oh, my teammate likes country. Oh, my teammate likes rap. My teammate likes, you know, gospel music. So you learn how to enjoy everything and respect it. But we tend to heavily rely on R&B and rap probably. Yeah, probably that, because it's why I've learned how to use my watch so much, because my watch is connected to the music so that I don't have to talk over it so much.
Nice. Yeah. You're in control.
Yes.
Stop,
yes.
You know, go.
Yes.
With that being said, so what's your go-to hype song, Coach?
Oh, so this year they would make fun of me because I did not become a Swiftie in this concert era thing. I see you shaking your head. However, I'm old enough to know when she was 14 and coming out. And the country singer in her probably did filter into my youthful dating stages of my husband. We have known each other since we were five. So I probably did listen to too much T-Swift this year. That was probably. And when the girls did ask me if we won, if I would sing. There's probably a video out there somewhere.
That's great. We're going to get a hold of that.
Yeah, of re-singing a T-Swift song for 22 wins for a 22 song.
I love it. I like it. I like that thinking. So we're going to have to find that. So if any of your players are listening right now, please forward us that, and we'll put it on our social media.
Oh, my gosh. So scary.
It'll help market the podcast.
Come on. My gosh. Yeah.
That's fun.
I am not known for my singing abilities.
But you're a great coach. So we're gonna stick with that. No, thanks. No worries. Who's your basketball inspiration, a player or coach, and why?
To be fair, it does age me, but it is Pat Summitt. And weirdly enough, when I was a younger basketball player, I learned that she started coaching the year I was born. She started coaching in 1974. I'll age myself. I don't mind my age. But I just thought that was a unique thing as I started loving the game. I thought, wow, this lady is doing so much and she's so good. And then they start winning the championships. And then I moved to Ohio and knew some of her players, and I got to work her camp with her. My husband was playing baseball in Knoxville. He was stationed there in Knoxville. And so I, in order to spend some time with him, signed up to work camp with her, and she, you know, hired me. And so I got to spend time with her and her sister. It was amazing. And obviously she demanded so much, and there were backside things of her that inherently you have to be her as a person to do them. Like, I'm not her. But there are things that even now, seeing what Gino's created, seeing what Dawn has created, the life I've lived, I know she inspired everybody having these beautiful locker rooms. I saw her locker room first. Like, she the first to have, like, the refrigerator in it.
It was a bougie locker room. Bougie wasn't even bougie.
Oh my gosh. Like, there were rooms. I remember coming out and being like, there wasn't just one room in their locker room. There's multiple rooms. Like, what the heck are they doing here at Tennessee? And it was amazing just to see how they recruited and set up and how they interacted and what her expectation was. And so it's hard not for me personally, because I know looking back, there was just that drive, and you would hear her talk about just, you have to work and you have to work and you have to work. And that connection of our years just stayed with me, that it was supposed to be like her. Like, if this is the expectation, you have to be this. You know, somewhere along the path, I wasn't as driven as people I've been around, and certainly I have friends that are really driven to be D1, top five schools, and this is what they want to be at. I don't necessarily need that in my life, but my life has different people in it and has a different purpose in it. I'm okay with that. But I think the work ethic and her standards and just how she was with people definitely left a forever lasting mark on me. Forever.
Well, that is a really cool experience that you had, you know. And with someone like her, especially.
Yeah, and I just said, you know, Corey Close at UCLA, my mom happened to tell me, she was like, oh, that lady you really like, she got Coach of the Year. Yeah. And I was like, thanks, Mom. Because she is. I love her. I love what she's doing at UCLA. Mm-hmm. But I had heard somewhere, and I hope this is true, that she got to spend time with John Wooden. And I was like, well, Mom, you know, like, to me that, like, oh, my gosh, like, in your career, wouldn't you like to say, hey, yeah, I've sat down and had a conversation with John Wooden? Like, that's crazy
to me.
That's
super cool, yeah.
And then I forget, like, I got to work with Pat Summitt.
Wow.
Like, you kind of forget just those small factors that make such an impact on, like the work that you want to put into your job.
Sure.
And I'm sure for her, she's learned some things, if that happened for her, that have just had a forever impact on how she coaches, how she deals with her players. But that will forever be a sticker for me that's on me forever.
Oh, what an awesome experience.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
And, of course.
So I guess I'm going to ask you this then. What's a hidden talent or a fun fact that your players don't even know about you?
I don't know. We do tend to get into these questions after practice. Like, we'll be like, oh, like, I have witch fingers.
They might know.
Yes, I lock my fingers and they look all weird. You know, I don't know if they all know that I played the saxophone in high school.
You're multi-talented. See, sports and music. Not everybody can have that type of mind, you know.
So I guess if I went out on a stretch, maybe we haven't gone that far.
Were you a good saxophone player?
I was pretty good, yeah. Right. I mean, I made first chair sometimes.
I was going to ask you what chair.
Yeah, I was first chair. Yeah. We battled. There's a guy that's a newspaper reporter now in my hometown and in our state. He writes that I think Jason and I battled quite a bit for first and second chair. He was definitely better. I'll give him all the credit.
I like that. I think you should, maybe, you're in the locker room at halftime, but they probably would have pulled out the saxophone to the halftime show, maybe.
They would die. Where's
Coach Hat? Where's supposed to be in here? So that might be kind of fun.
I'm not sure who would be more embarrassed, my son or my team.
There you go.
Sorry.
You're probably both. They'd be like, what is she doing? No, that's pretty neat. So another question. If you could have dinner with any, female in sports, past or present, who would that be?
Top of my list would probably bring back Pat, because I don't think people realize how funny she was. I certainly didn't until I worked camp. And her sister looked just like her. People would misinterpret her sister for her.
Yes, I saw that.
Yes, like that was crazy.
She wasn't a twin, though, was it?
They were not twins, but she would sit and the girls would go crazy and be like, Pat's here, we need her sign. And it was her sister. It was crazy. but I just enjoyed, after camps, we would go and you could see the interaction she had. So actually to get more of her attention to ask questions would be awesome. Cheryl Miller would be at the top of that list. I just watched her podcast with some guys the other day. I just think she has the most beautiful insights.
Yeah, she started coaching. She played at USC, right?
Yes.
Was that where Cheryl Miller was at? Okay.
And just the way she talks about past basketball and current basketball and competing with her brothers. I only have brothers. And just her whole dynamic, I would eat dinner with her every night of the week, I think.
She's got a cool personality. Yes. I saw her. She was at the All-Star game in Cleveland. I think it was last season. I think at the end of last season.
I think
she was one of the All-Star coaches. But anyway, she was just really coolio, laid back, just kind of chilling and, just having a blast. You could tell she still loves the game, and she was just big fun.
Exactly.
And I just liked how she was just kind of, there to just play some basketball.
Yes.
It's like, you're Cheryl Miller, right?
Exactly.
So she's very humble. So
she is. She's bold and humble all in the same breath. She'll give it to you, but she's also humble. So I agree with you. And so she would definitely be in that mix. And then as people know, it's one of the few shirts I have for a player. I'm a huge Sue Bird fan.
Ooh.
Huge Sue Bird fan. So Sue Bird would have to be the other one that I would like to sit down with and just, she's played with the pinnacle of players.
Oh, yeah.
She sees the game from the front end. She's just younger than me. So as I was coming out, she was coming up. So she's somebody I was watching change the game. It's not like Dawn was in that group. They were coming in through USA Basketball. Diana Taurasi came next. Mm-hmm. So I'm huge fans of that group of women because they were coming up right as I was coming out.
They were catalytic, don't you think? Bent on the game of basketball.
Huge. And you were seeing more and more of the game with them. Not like it is now because we didn't have the media presence, but the conversation of women's basketball was coming out more. We didn't have that conversation. We didn't really have AAU basketball, let's be real.
Right.
And so I think her whole dynamic of going from this quiet being on a very dynamic team to who she is now, where she feels her voice or perceives to have a voice and knows what she wants and has led to national championships and world championships on the Seattle Storm. I would just like to know, you're talking about leadership, how has that growth happened for a player of her status that would be able to give back to me as a coach to players now? I think she'd be one that could feed into me as a coach to actually feed back into players.
Absolutely. I think they need to have a conference coming up. Maybe we have to put that together. And
yes.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, because she had to balance. Like, she had to balance a Diana Taurasi.
Yes.
And there are players, like, on my team, like, that need to learn how to balance different talents. Like, you have you have different personalities, but you have different talents. And how do you compromise your own self because somebody else has a different personality or a different skill set? And I think she does that so beautifully. And you can even see it in her relationship. Like, Rapinoe is not her. Like, different. It seems to have different personalities there. Sure. So she does it in such a great way, and she's still so respectful of her coaching staff, of her career, how she's very eloquent in her way of talking. So I think she could just teach some things from that point of view that would help us as coaches share that and pour that into players.
Wouldn't that be a cool conference, seriously, if it was all about the, and I'm sure they touch upon it in some of the
yes
the tournaments,
and no.
But it's not that.
No.
I've never heard, but wouldn't that be, it would be very a unique opportunity to do something like that at that level.
Oh, it'd be amazing, because those aren't really questions we get to spend time asking.
Sure.
As, hey, you know, when you were in this, and I do tell our players a lot, that's probably some of the best coaching advice I got was listening when I first came out of college, listening to my own teammates, like things I learned from my teammates that were going on while we played, that we were all like, wait, what? Like, that happened? Oh, yeah. And, you know, I had one player just point blankly say, yeah, don't do that with your team. If you're going to coach, don't do that. Like, don't let that happen with players of yours. And I've really tried my absolute best to make that happen, because I had learned after the fact what that did to her and why she didn't finish with me, by the way.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's just, those are important factors that we don't talk about enough as far as, like, going back and asking the players. And they need time. They need time away from the game. So Sue's been away from the game so long that it would be interesting from her perspective. You know, so each one of those people would give me different
insight. It'd be different.
Very different. And different conversations.
Yes. So what advice would you give a young woman who wants to, or any woman for that matter, who wants to be a collegiate women's basketball coach? What's the one thing?
One, I would tell you, you can do it. You can manage coaching and your life. I get that question a lot. Oh, you had a family and you stayed in the business. And I don't ever want them to be nervous about the fact that I did leave and coach high school basketball and was an AD for a while. That was a choice I made more for my it's family, excuse me, a family decision based on my husband's career. That I'm really happy I took, because I've learned both sides of the recruiting. And I wouldn't have walked the path with people that I met if I had not done that. I met some of the most beautiful people in making that choice. But that would be the one thing I would say, is no matter how hard it gets, because coaching college basketball can be hard. The grind is hard. And depending on what level you want, the grind gets harder because it doesn't stop, and they're adding to it. They're adding NIL. They're adding social media. They're adding time to it. They are trying to take time away and say, hey, go, you know, stop and take time for yourself. But that's really hard to do when you're in the cycle. So I would just say that you can do it. You have to have good people around you, and you can manage. Don't think you have to sacrifice being a family woman or being who you want to be because you want this job, because this job can give you so much back. But you have to learn how to control it, like you are in control of it. And you don't have to be pushed to be – it's just like recruiting as a player. You get – like, I'm sure people have said, why don't you stay at D1 to me? I didn't want to stay at D1. I love where I'm at now. But, you know, I had conversations at Final Four. Some people want to go back. They're not happy at the NAI level. There's some things that they're not adjusting to well. Everybody's different. Have control of it. Have control and know that you can be well supported and do whatever you want to do would be my advice to them.
All right. So I have one final question for you. I'd like you to finish this sentence for me.
Oh.
Women got game because?
They're strong and they can persevere through pretty much anything.
All right, good. I agree 100%. I love it. And I thank you so much for being here today. And Mrs. Coach Bradford.
Yes.
You got game.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Women Got Game. I want to give a special thanks to my guest, Coach Tandy Bradford, and to my executive producer, Chris Pfeiffer. I'm your host and producer, Sophia Fisher. Feel free to visit us at wgte.org/womengotgame. Join us next time.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.